Last July, 1.3 billion liters of sewage flowed into Toronto's waterways after a big storm. It was 500 Olympic swimming pools worth of partially treated poo and pee water, discharged from the city's treatment plants before they were properly treated. It flowed into our rivers and into Lake Ontario. Beaches were closed for swimming and marked unsafe due to elevated levels of E. coli. It was gross. And when it happened, Canada Land had a reporter who had already been working on a story about just this kind of shit. Here is Leora Schertzer to set it up.
This is a story about ever since our current city sewers were first built over 100 years ago, most of us have not had to think about our poop. But now, our sewers and water pipes are aging, and 30% of Canadian water and wastewater infrastructure has either reached or passed the end of its lifespan. During the COVID-19 pandemic, I worked as a farmhand on Salt Spring Island in BC. For those of you who've never been to Salt Spring, it's a charming island in the Strait of Georgia filled with old hippies, arts and crafts shops, and summer cottages. And as I was getting my bearings in my temporary home, one of the first things the farmer showed me was my toilet. It was a garbage can. And for the next 3 months, I composted my own shit. This experience of emptying my own waste from a garbage bin into a barrel and transforming it into human manure made me realize something. We take for granted that when we flush the toilet, whatever is in there disappears.
But of course, our shit does not just disappear. And because we have not been taking care of our shit, the shit is going to hit the fan. Two quick warnings before we go any further. First of all, there will be more bad scatological puns in today's show. Sorry about that. Secondly, if you are eating or around people who are eating or planning to eat anytime soon, dear God, don't listen to this. And one more thing about today's show. This story is a product of our Canada Labs fellowship program. We launched this program last year as part of our new Canada Labs News Lab, with help from Amazon Music and the Perspective Fund. And the fellowship program is a competitive fellowship in which students and aspiring journalists apply to come work here for a while. We decided that we would not make this an internship program where, you know, kids fetch us coffee, but instead a fellowship program where we provide each fellow with a desk and a recording studio and an editor and gear and a paycheck. Everything they need to produce their first piece of professional audio journalism. You heard a story from our other Canada Labs fellow, Mia Johnson, a while back, and today I'm really happy to bring you Leora Schertzer's piece. After Leora finished her fellowship with us, she got a job at the Montreal Gazette. We could not be happier for her. Now, here is Leora's story. It's complicated. Wait for it.
A busted water feeder main shutting down the Trans-Canada. The broken pipe, one of Calgary's main sources of water. The break impacting plumbing at several schools in the area, too.
Having no bathrooms, having to go outside and use those porta-potties over there.
Have you managed to do that?
I'm holding it in. I'm not risking it.
The reality is what happened in the city of Calgary is not a city of Calgary issue. It's an all of Canada problem. I think it's safe to say most Canadians don't really care that much about their infrastructure, and that's because half the time you can't see it. It costs a lot of money to maintain our infrastructure, and the average Canadian doesn't necessarily want to pay for it.
We don't like to think about sewage, and when it's all working fine, we don't have to. But if we don't get comfortable talking about we could soon be headed for serious trouble if our infrastructure collapses. And given that recent reports say 30% of Canadian water and wastewater infrastructure has either reached or passed the end of its lifespan, that failure feels more like a when than an if.
So you said up the road on the left?
We take for granted that when we flush the toilet, whatever is in there disappears. But there was one man I had met who didn't take it for granted. In my time on Salt Spring, I crossed paths with a man who, like me, composted his own shit. I tracked down Harry Warner.
Oh. What's the dog's name again?
That's Ziggy.
I'm arriving at Harry's farm commune, which he started over 30 years ago. Harry is a tall Irishman whose beard has grown down to his chest. Some would describe him as eccentric.
So you're here to look at s***ers. I mean...
More or less. How many do you have? Just one?
What, for 16 people? Ooh, that'd be busy, wouldn't it? You book a couple of days ahead, so there's one.
While the idea of coming face-to-face with a bucket of your own crap might be foreign to many city people, it's relatively common in life on the farm. Pooping is the last step of the nutrient cycle, where crops are turned back into soil. And manure production is not limited to cows and chickens.
Oh, your leg is bleeding as well. I don't know if you saw
it. Fucking... My rooster attacked me this morning. I walk around naked a lot, and the bastard as I was at...
This is your pad?
No, this is...
I'm not going to lie. When I first learned that I'd have to get up close and personal with a garbage can of my own poo, I was grossed out.
And you have to empty it every couple days?
I don't that much. I know I'm full of but not that much.
But the first time I emptied the garbage can, I remember thinking that it wasn't so disgusting. It was actually quite grounding, knowing that my own waste was being transformed into valuable manure, rather than flushed away. And the whole experience made me wonder, what actually happens when we flush the toilet? Our crap doesn't just disappear, so where does it go? And what is its environmental impact? People generally don't want to manhandle their own poo, let alone think about it. But many people who are conscious of its impact, like Harry Warner, make it a big part of their lives.
You know, it's not extreme in any way. It's just a sensible approach to what is not a very sensibly handled thing.
The idea for this story started on Salt Spring off the BC coast during COVID. But today I'm picking up the thread of that story nearly 4 years later and nearly 3,500 kilometers east in Brighton, Ontario.
DIYM is available everywhere at brightontoday.ca.
Hello, Doug LeBlanc.
How you doing, sweetheart?
I didn't know where you was.
I just drove up at the house and just went around and went back down. And I'm on my way to the wastewater treatment plant here in Brighton.
Brighton is your typical small Ontario lakeside town. Population, a little over 12,000. Town motto, where the past greets the future. Its slow pace is offset by the speed of Highway 2, which runs right through their downtown core. It's got one little central area with a library, strip malls, a couple cafes, a legal office, and a high school, which Miley Cyrus actually sang a song about. She picked it up from a demo made by a Brighton local in 2007.
I'm sorry, your first name is?
Leora.
With Leora, the newspaper lady for the wastewater treatment plant that's going to do the article on it.
It's going to be
This is Doug LeBlanc. He's on the phone with his wife, Becky, while driving me to a small town wastewater treatment plant in his big black GMC truck.
And she asked me, she wanted to know about my history. I said we met at our first dance at the Beacon Church, remember?
That's right, when we were 16 years old, so that's 53 years for me and 54 for you.
Yep.
Right? He's not trained yet, but I still keep working on him. I haven't given up. Anyhow, guys, have a good meeting. He does get verbal diarrhea, so he might have to tell him to, you know, not talk so much.
I came to Brighton, Ontario, to talk to the people who live here about their sewage problems, because for decades, Brighton's wastewater plant has been at maximum capacity. Sewers and wastewater plants are designed to treat the sewage of a certain population level. I had heard the town can't grow. Brighton's sewage capacity situation has become so dire that the town can't build any new housing. And Doug is the guy who can help explain how this all happened.
Hey, honey, Becky, tell him I was the only one to design water and wastewater treatment plants in the military as a master corporal.
I don't have to tell her that. You can tell her that. That's a fact.
Yeah.
Sewage is an incredibly human issue, and humans are famously complicated.
I don't.
They have their own histories, drives, and problems, including our friend Doug. Originally from an Acadian town in Nova Scotia, Doug is a former military engineer with nearly 40 years of experience in waste management.
She wants to know if I'm knowledgeable. She asked me, where did I get my knowledge?
Oh, sweetie. You know where he got it? Through experience, through studying University of Sacramento, plus military training.
And doing all the correspondent courses at night to learn.
That's what I said, University of Sacramento, right?
Yep.
Yeah, you did a lot of work, Doug, but you are an expert. Anyhow, I gotta go. I love ya.
He's got experience in waste management of all kinds.
I helped develop the microbes for treating hydrocarbon contaminated soil, working with the CDC lab, Dr. Steve Interio. I own the 5 soil recycling facilities to recycle soil and divert them from landfills. And I sold those companies to GFL, Green for Life. I designed 4 facilities. I just got 1 C of A, the only one of its type in North America, that we're going to be building in Napanee right now.
On our trip to the wastewater plant, Doug wants to tell me about sludge blankets.
When the sludge blanket used to be 3 or 4 feet thick, 6 feet thick across the entire lagoon, it was bubbling constantly.
A sludge blanket is a layer of sludge that lives at the bottom of a bed of wastewater. It forms naturally over time, and the microbes in the sludge blanket eat the pollutants in the wastewater. And those bubbles Doug just described were ammonia and sulfur gas. Because Brighton's sewage treatment plant was working beyond capacity, the microbes in the sludge blanket were not able to absorb the volume of ammonia that was coming off of the urine. And those gas bubbles had a smell.
So your ammonia and your methane gas were coming off. In a westerly wind, it would just go through town and go through river and make people sick.
You might know the smell of ammonia from cleaning products. It smells vaguely like cat pee or sweat. Anyway, it's not the kind of thing you want to be surrounded by. The ammonia gas from Brighton's wastewater plant used to stink up the whole town in the 90s and the early 2000s. Back then, Doug was hired as a consultant to help get rid of this problem. And he got the gig because he'd been working with sludge blankets for decades.
Yeah, I was hired in 2004 to do a study, and I solved a lot of their problems.
Gotcha.
Got them the drying beds, got the compost facility going for them, and to start skimming it off and to remove the ammonia. And then they started a wastewater task force. A task force helped them out.
Doug solved part of the problem, but not all of it. Even though the smell has gone away, the ammonia has not. In fact, the ammonia pollution has spread to the lake nearby and has hurt the wildlife. Doug is particularly worried about the American eel populations off the shores of Brighton.
I used to go mackerel fishing.
Oh, yeah.
Catch haddock and cod, eels, bring them home for supper.
I haven't heard that much of people eating eels until I met you. Well, I've heard that, you know, it happens.
But. They're sweet. They're beautiful.
Hmm.
One bone.
How do you cut them?
Bake them. Or you can fry them up. Usually you bake them with a little bit of onion and milk and crackers on top.
Hmm.
Bake them in the oven. I like cooking the old ways.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, Doug and I are approaching the wastewater plant. I'd driven 2 hours from Toronto to Brighton specifically to see this plant. I've been planning this for weeks, and now my goal was in sight.
Okay. I'll give it a shot.
See? Can you ask your questions? I'll answer.
Sure.
We pull off the main road and up to the chain link fence surrounding the plant.
There's no poison ivy here?
No, better not be.
Only to find that it's locked. Doug says he'll come up with another plan, whatever that is. In the meantime, we'll kill time with Doug's friend Mary. Her place is a few minutes' drive from the plant, just like anywhere else in town.
Yeah, let's sit down if that's okay. I can keep my shoes on?
Leave them on.
Okay.
You know, what,
I'll bring you a coffee.
I can't talk without a coffee.
I'll go get you a coffee.
The plant and its sludge blanket have been a part of her life for decades. Mary Tadman's family has been part of Brighton's fishing industry for three generations. It used to be a significant industry here, and in small towns, the death of any major industry can rock its citizens.
Yeah, in 2003, it was horrible here.
Mary Tadman is a longtime resident whose family was personally affected by Brighton's wastewater woes, especially the ammonia pollution.
Oh, I've got a black coffee.
Yeah, I can put cream in it. I just like bugging.
She's also an old friend of Doug. Mary grew up in a family of fishermen who all used to fish in Lake Ontario, off the shore of Brighton.
My grandfather, my dad, my brothers are all commercial fishermen, and they used to set nets down right here at the cove.
When the ammonia pollution leached into nearby Lake Ontario, it drastically changed her family's way of life and ability to work.
Well, my brother Glenn was on council for 20-something years and fought it for years, saying, you know, that this lagoon is killing my business. He was a commercial fisherman, but he had the fish market here, and he bought everybody else's fish and sold them. And then my dad before him, then my uncle before him. And they caught so many fish at that time. I remember they always took it by train. They would take the boxes to the train and ship them. Now,
when Mary's family was in the fishing business, there were over 30 commercial fishermen in and around Brighton. Today, there are three.
There's Dinky.
Dinky, yeah.
And there's Cooper.
No, they're together. Well, Weddle, yeah. Okay, Weddle and my brother Harry.
Yeah, Harry, that's it.
The ammonia pollution from the wastewater plant did more than kill Mary's brother's business and Brighton's fishing industry. She remembers the stink as well.
It was horrible here because of this stench. We couldn't open our windows. It was so bad down here.
In fact, she was so disturbed by all these wastewater problems that she got involved in municipal politics.
So basically, that was my main mission. So I ran for council to do something about it.
That fight to solve the ammonia problem led to a 15-year political career for Mary. 15 years might sound like a long time, but the problem is still not fixed. That's because working with wastewater lagoons is complicated.
The big thing was to get control of the ammonia, which we never did, and we still haven't till this day.
Town council has battled the ammonia issue for decades. Local politicians and engineers can't agree on what to do next. They did manage to get rid of the ammonia smell, but as Mary noted, the pollution is not under control, and the fisheries continue to suffer.
This is a self-driving truck.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it drives itself. Yeah, I'm just going to park out of the way by the trees and we'll go around.
Sure.
If they come, we're looking for the ducks.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
His comment about the ducks, it's our cover, if anyone asks what we're doing there. Because technically, we're trespassing.
And you ask your questions, I'll answer.
Sure.
Doug and I are back at the treatment plant to try our luck again. I really wanted to see the wastewater lagoon for myself, to really understand what was plaguing this town. Doug tells me more about how the waste treatment process works.
You need to take oxygen from the top and blow it in. And see the oxygen there? See there? So that's the wastewater from the town comes in from over there.
Okay, from
the like many small towns in Canada, Brighton uses a lagoon wastewater system. A lagoon is a large pond that breaks down sewage bacteria through oxygen exposure. Lagoons are very simple and low cost, if land is widely available.
You can see the grayish color, but there's not very much. When it's good, it's going to be nice and dark or brownish, and it'll have a nice earthy flavor.
I wasn't sure what to expect, and frankly, it was a bit underwhelming. I imagined the bane of this Ontario town would be an eyesore with apocalyptic levels of flooding. I thought it would be decrepit and falling apart, and I expected it to smell awful. But it didn't. The lagoon more closely resembled a large pond surrounded by reeds, grass, and geese, with a few discrete underwater jets and a lifesaver ring hanging on a post.
Has it ever been used?
You have to have it for safety.
Yeah.
Whenever you buy water, you should have one
But you've never known of any incidents?
No.
Another layer of Brighton's ammonia problem? The cost of fixing it. A few years ago, Doug helped advise on a $6 million plan for a lagoon that can handle more capacity. But the municipal government decided that Brighton was due for an even heftier, more industrial wastewater plant. The cost of a new plant would be $42 million. That's seven times the cost of the proposal Doug worked on.
I don't know where they came from, but now they want to spend like $36, $42 million. It's insane. This town will never recover. It's only a town of 12,000.
$6 million, $36 million, $42 million. Why are the numbers bouncing around so wildly? And why would the town council opt for a plan that costs seven times more?
The smell had already...
Let's put it this way. Yes, multiple engineering firms coming in and saying what was going to work and what wasn't going to work.
That's Keith Lee, Brighton's former wastewater operator, now retired. He kept the books at the treatment plant for 20 years. He's tall, a big guy, but around Brighton, he goes by the nickname Tiny. Where did the name Tiny come from?
I got that in high school the first day I walked in. Some guy tried to pick a fight with me, and he called me Tiny right off the bat. And from that day on, I had it, and that was back in 75.
Wow. And it stuck.
It stuck.
That pugnacious attitude has stuck with Keith ever since. He's not even sure if he should talk to me. Partly because he has a habit of talking bureaucrats he used to work with.
You do realize, Doug, this will probably end any opportunities that I had of possibly getting any part-time work.
Well,
it's up to you if you want to talk.
Well, it just depends on what you want to ask.
Well, I guess calculating the cost of what needs to be done, even figuring out what needs to be done, is a complex undertaking. Existing infrastructure, engineering needs, social and political concerns are factored into any solution and subsequent cost. But Keith Tiny Lee wants to focus on one metric you've probably never heard of. One way to measure the pollution level of Brighton's wastewater is called the trout test.
Yeah, we have to do what they call a trout test, where they put 10 little troutlings into one of our samples of 20 liters. And they
of the wastewater. No, of the lake.
Oh, wastewater, yeah. Oh, effluent okay. From the wastewater system. Hmm. And they see how many die. I think in all the years we've done it, we've probably had three or four die. You're not allowed to have three or four die in one session. So we've maybe lost four trout over the entire 8-9 years we've been doing it.
Hmm. The trout test may sound folksy, but it's a scientific method used by Environment Canada. Keith feels that the test results are evidence that the pollution levels aren't so bad. The provincial government doesn't feel the same way. Brighton is at risk of a fine for their ammonia pollution levels. And for Keith, these trout test results are part of the problem. He says the ammonia pollution needs to be fixed, but thinks it's not a big enough emergency to secure a $42 million grant from the provincial government.
This is where the problem is. They want the government funding to pay for this. Government's not going to give them any money. They've only got one parameter out of whack. There's more issues at other plants than what we have.
The one parameter Keith refers to here is the ammonia issue. Keith thinks Brighton is not alone in trying to fix their outdated sewage systems. He says other towns with even more severe wastewater problems are competing for the same government grants when there's a limited pot of cash. Remember, 30% of Canadian wastewater infrastructure is past its lifespan. Keith knows they're competing with other towns for those government dollars.
One issue is, yes, it's not good. But when you've got a plant that's got 7-8 issues, every time it rains they have to bypass, that is more important to the government than what this is. Yes, we're going to fine you, but at the end of the day, they're not going to give you any money to fix it. And that's where you're going to end up. If we get money, I'd be very surprised.
And the growth that we're having now.
I wanted to find out if Brighton had a shot at winning the government grant that would let them build a new wastewater plant. So the next day, I pull up to Brighton's town hall, where they would hold a town council special advisory meeting to review their wastewater treatment plant. The council chamber was just one room above the Brighton Library. There were just over a dozen officials in the meeting, outnumbering the audience by a factor of four. In the gallery, we had the town's lone volunteer reporter, a retired guy, Doug, and myself.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's 2:30 p.m. I'll call this special council meeting to order. Ask everyone to please...
That's Brighton's mayor, Brian Ostrander. The town council meeting laid bare for me that resolving Brighton's ammonia problem was even more complicated than I initially understood.
We're done experimenting on Brighton's wastewater treatment facility. We're done pouring chemicals into a system that isn't going to treat ammonia. We have to go down this road. We are a big grown-up municipality now. And what we have is a system that was never designed to treat ammonia. I guarantee you, if we don't go down this road, and yes, we are being pigeonholed tonight, today, we will be fined. I guarantee you.
The town council meeting discussed that the mechanical wastewater plant proposal, which was drawn up by the engineering firm J.L. Richards, is not designed to handle more capacity than the current lagoon system. So while this proposal might be able to affix the ammonia pollution, Brighton would still not be able to grow as a town. The proposed overhaul is expensive, but it would only solve half of the problem. And to afford J.L. Richards' $42 million proposal, the town applied for a grant from the Ontario government's Housing Enabling Water Systems Fund.
How do we pay for this? We don't have any money left in our borrowing, do we?
How do we get people to stop flushing their toilets for 18 months? We don't. Mm-hmm. That's the answer.
The town council meeting went on for 3 hours, batting between council members, the engineering firm who was contracted to build the new plant, and the wastewater operator who was Keith's successor. As far as town council meetings go, things got pretty heated.
So I think let's turn the temperature down a little bit. I think there is frustration for sure.
If we were to build the capacity increase now, it would cost us $12.5 to $17.5 million. But if we wait and have to initiate it as a new project, we're looking at a capital cost of $25 to $30 million. All of a sudden now we have a wastewater system that costs $60 million.
If changing things...
At the end of the town hall meeting, the council approved a $75,000 increase to J.L. Richards' wastewater plant design.
Whether or not we actually do it or not, $75,000 is cheaper than a $100-something-thousand-dollar fine.
All those in favor? Any opposed? The motion is defeated. So the motion remains as it was. No changes to the motion.
In the end, Brighton did not get a grant from the Ford government toward their new wastewater plant. There were over 50 Ontario towns selected to get funding, illustrating just how widespread this problem is. But they will still go forward and build the new treatment plant, which has since gone up from $42 to $48 million. Because you can't have a town without a functional sewer system. Well, maybe with a few exceptions, if some Canadians take a DIY approach to sewage management. We're back halfway across the country on Salt Spring Island with Harry.
Sawdust.
Oh, you want me to give a demonstration? So the sawdust, so you do your business and then put in about a cupful of that and go until the container is, you know, almost full. And this, incidentally, has been legalized or okayed by the government, by VIHA. Do you know about VIHA?
I've heard a little bit from Greg. What was the story with that? Did they come after you?
This journey started with Harry demonstrating how his composting toilet works. And since then, I've learned about sludge blankets and their symbiotic relationship with ammonia. I've learned how that ammonia can affect local wildlife and the people of small-town Ontario. And most importantly, I've learned that solving Canada's sewage crisis is political. It's personal. It's wildly expensive. And it's something most people just don't want to talk about. Because shit is complicated.
Because it occurred to me after I contacted...